ideology of the left, the lockstep ideology. Another article here, it's about federalism, and this is actually written by a student, and he was concerned that only 51% of Americans would vote to ratify the United States Constitution if given the chance. And this comes back to this business about not understanding what it's really is good about the Bill of Rights and the Constitution and so forth. There's a lot of criticisms that can be leveled at an American. I think most folks, since we're inundated with criticism, would be able to stand up and pull out their list and go down it. But how many people will actually be able to come up with a list of some of the good things that have arisen out of the American experience here? So this fellow is a student, and he's talking about his just seeing the Constitution go down the drain. He says, we've traded our republic for a democracy. 90% of our federal government operates without the authority of the Constitution. That's a pretty good estimate. I've seen it vary from about 75% to about that, 90%. How do you think about that? It's kind of tough to think about your federal government as 90% of it having absolutely no basis. And see, we have a caller here, but we're going to have to wait on that. We're just getting towards the end of the program. If you want to call in next week, the call-in number, if you just want to jot it down, is 464-8295. So he goes on and talks about Roosevelt and his blatant disregard for the Constitution and how he epitomizes so many liberals and Democrats, where they just simply turn their back on the Constitution. Well, I'd say it's also true of many Republicans who turn their back upon the Constitution and Bill of Rights. It's coming back to one party here in the United States, the Republicans, the oil party, call it what you will. The establishment, I think, is a good a description as any. Well, this is Tom Cloney. It's been very moving to be here with you, and I will be with you next Monday at 7 o'clock. Thank you very much.
It's a hell here on earth, in some city schoolyard. When bullets and birth control outnumber books, something's wrong. There's a hunger for good news and heroes. Good news is no news, so all of the heroes are gone. We must take America back, put it into the gangs and the drugs in the streets, and the fact that the bad guys most always go free, that is wrong.
Good evening, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course I welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being because we have a very, very special guest with us this evening, and we are facing some difficult times in the not-too-distant future. We certainly are going to war in the Middle East, and I fear that one of the complications of that may well be civil unrest in this country and the release of biological attack on this country. Now, whether it will come from Saddam Hussein or from the Iranians or perhaps from our own stocks of supplies, I don't know. There's much to suggest that the anthrax attack on America came for our own military supplies, and we do know that at least some people in government knew it was coming, because Dick Cheney and members of the White House staff, on the very evening of the September 11th attack last year, were started on Cipro, specific for pulmonary anthrax. Now, what did they know on September 11th of last year? The rest of the people didn't know. It was a week to 10 days later before the first anthrax-laced letter was received, and before people started dying or becoming extremely ill. 5 died. I think 13 were infected. But the studies have shown that the anthrax attack did not originate with Saddam Hussein or with Muhammad Atta, but originated from our own military supplies. So right now with us this evening is Bill Sarte, and we're going to be talking about what you can do to build up your immune system should there be some sort of a biological anthrax, smallpox, some other sort of attack on America. Hi, Bill. How are you doing?
Good evening. Nice to be with you.
Well, it's good to have you again, and I understand you've been back on CNN, on the CBN, the Christian Broadcasting Network there, telling people a little bit about how to build up their immunity.
Yes, doing tapings on the role of garlic in health, because it's pertinent to our times. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. And of course, some of the information, what we can do with vitamins and minerals and so on, just to improve our health. And of course, these are inexpensive, simple ways of doing things, but very powerful. And of course, I was called back east to put this actually on television so that more viewers could see this in a simple format that they, you know, people really learn one thing at a time, and it's much easier to catch it both orally and visually. So the power of television, of course, can't be beat. I think radio beats it any day, because we have so many listeners and people still get so much. Reading books, that's one way to learn, but the fastest way is just someone listening to someone, you know, and if someone's really informed, it really comes across powerfully in how people are going to change their lives. And we're going to give some people some simple answers tonight how to protect themselves from any kind of a biological threat, whether it's the tap water in your home that's contaminated or the food down at the hamburger stand, or let's just say a biological threat of any kind.
Well, you know, I think so many people say, well, if I get ill, I go to the doctor, but that is not the ideal solution. The ideal solution is that people look after themselves and do everything they can to maintain their health and keep their immunity intact. And only when you absolutely have to do you actually go to the doctor and take antibiotics. Now, antibiotics are wonderful, and certainly I started practicing medicine when penicillin was just becoming available, the tetracyclines had just become available, and they do wonderful, wonderful things. But the major thing is to get your body into a shape so that you're not going to be so susceptible to infection, and maybe you won't be able to, won't have to use the antibiotics, or, of course, there might be a situation where if we do go into a chaotic situation in America, as certain people in our government are anticipating, because those of you who listen to our programs regularly will know that FEMA has put out a $300 million bid for a plan to set up tent cities for displaced people, for millions of displaced Americans. Now, they're talking about spending billions of dollars for these portable cities with their food supplies and sanitation supplies and tents for American citizens in America. What do they know that we don't know? And if that should happen, of course, would we have ready access to the medical facilities that we're so used to here in the United States? Certainly, you go into Rhodesia today, when I practiced medicine in Africa, Rhodesia was a very advanced society. The doctors there were top-notch. The medical school was excellent. And, of course, everybody had access to good medical care. Today in Rhodesia, things are chaotic. The hospitals have no medicines. People are dying from lack of medical care, and especially, of course, with not only the violence and uncertainty, but the AIDS epidemic that's sweeping that country. Could something like that happen in America? I hope and pray not. But let's just talk with Bill a little bit about what the individual can do right now to think about strengthening their own immunity. Why don't you pick up on that idea, Bill?
Well, certainly we hear about the flu shots in the winter. I think they're encouraging everyone right now to go for flu shots, particularly older adults. You have to have an immune system for all these things to work. I don't care whether it's an anthrax vaccine, a smallpox vaccine. You have to have an immune system. We're really concerned about, about 40 million people really can't safely take a smallpox vaccination. These are pregnant females, little young children, people with immune system problems, particularly eczema, diabetes, on certain kinds of medications, the elderly. You know, when you go for a flu shot, you really need those antibodies to get up and work, and they find that if people take a little bit of vitamin C as a supplement, a little bit of vitamin E, a little bit of selenium, and a little bit of zinc, you know, their immune system works a lot better, to the point where it'll make the antibodies so that those vaccines actually work. And in some cases, when we look at the reports, that's all you needed to do. You were a lot better off than getting the vaccine. Understand, vaccines, the live vaccines, you're getting a little bit of a disease. They're bringing you the disease itself. And so then, of course, you've got to fight a little battle. You've got to have a little fever and so on. With people that have immune problems, boy, I'm not so sure I want to give them a little bit of a disease. It could be fatal. So we are concerned about some of the approaches here. We think the human immune system is far stronger than certainly any disease, or humanity would have been wiped out a long time ago, and that includes AIDS and any other virus that they can throw at us. So the immune system needs to be tweaked. We certainly improved the immune system a long time ago when we began to fortify our foods with vitamins and minerals. If you recall the flu epidemic of 1918, which swept around the world, we certainly didn't have food fortification at the time. We'd only had a few years of trying to clean up the water in the United States by chlorinating it. So we chlorinated water, and then we wiped out cholera and dysentery and typhoid, which are three major diseases. And then we, of course, began to fortify our foods with vitamins and minerals, mostly because we had taken a lot of these minerals and vitamins out of our foods by getting to white flour and so many of the other processing things that we did. So we put them in there to prevent scurvy and pellagra and rickets and so on. But today we can just move ahead. If we would just get about 300 to 500 milligrams of vitamin C, maybe up to 2,000 milligrams of vitamin C, 200 units of vitamin E, 200 micrograms of selenium, and maybe 15 to 25 milligrams of zinc, those things you can all get in one simple pill, probably a good multivitamin of some kind, and your immune system is going to be working at top performance. We strongly suggest that in these times, but particularly for anybody, even the healthy people. Well, none of us can skirt around this. So we know now that our best diet cannot improve our immune system to what some of these food supplements can do. We need to take advantage of that information and act on it. The Journal of American Medical Association did an about-face a couple of months ago and said every American needs a multivitamin. Now, some of the inexpensive ones are all they suggested. I'm suggesting maybe a little bit more in dosage than what they're talking about, and your immune system will be working at top performance, the best knowledge that we know today. Get it going. Check the dosages a little bit next to what I just read off to you. So So you'll know that you've got your immune system going, and understand the best diet won't do it. I think even little kids, a good vitamin pill, all those things will help out for the children. You can get powdered vitamin C down at the health food store, mix it in the orange juice, and the kids get a lot more vitamin C. So easy ways to do these things. They're not expensive, and it'll really pay off for you, particularly around the time we get vaccines. Don't forget the vaccines are often laden with mercury, preservatives, and so on, especially young children, but even adults. They're going to get these preservatives in their system, and that's going to cause problems. We're particularly concerned about autism in young children, but if you increase the vitamin C around the any time that you get a vaccination, you'll decrease the side effects and so on. So it's very important to follow the rules, get some of these antioxidants and minerals into your system around the time you have any kind of vaccination at any time in your lifetime.
All right. Well, I certainly agree with that. And I think it's really so important that we do take multivitamins. You know, this is one thing that in medical school, they did not stress the importance of nutrition. Yes, we took a course in nutrition, but it was never really stressed, the importance of that, you know, just simply in caring for people. And only as time went by and I got a little bit older, a little bit smarter, did I begin to prescribe for my patients, you know, vitamin and mineral supplements. But I think that they're extremely important, and I think especially in times like this. Now, I personally don't take flu shots because there are complications from it. They never tell you about the Guillain-Barré and some of the very serious medical complications that do result from taking flu immunization. Certainly Dr. Horowitz, who is a good friend of mine, and he, of course, opposes all vaccines. I don't necessarily oppose them all at all, but I think that we have to be very, very careful in what we take, and we have to have a good, long track record before we want anybody taking any vaccine. The trouble is that so many vaccines have been given without a track record. We've got a problem, let's solve it. We've got a new vaccine. We've tried it for 2 weeks. We've tried it for 6 months. Let's go ahead and do it to everyone. And time and again, we've had disasters, whether it be the polio vaccine that contained SV40, a cancer-producing virus. And, of course, over 96 million doses of that were given in the United States, many of them after they realized what had happened, but they didn't want to tell the American people or panic them and make them realize that we had contaminated an entire generation of people with a cancer-producing virus. So I certainly, myself, I do not ordinarily take the flu vaccine. I'm 74 years old, and by taking health supplements, I very, very seldom will get the flu, and if I do have any problems at all, it certainly doesn't last very long. But there are other things. Now, you've been working with a new product, haven't you, Bill?
Well, we did have Peter Jostling here from Britain. He's a chemist, an inventor, head of a company in Britain. We learned about this about a year ago, almost to the day, from British Broadcasting. Had a front page headline about a garlic supplement, which made a startling headline in Europe. Wasn't covered here in the United States whatsoever. But a special type of garlic supplement reduced the risk of the common cold by 50% and cut the number of days of symptoms for the people who did get a cold during the winter months from about 5 days down to 1.5 days. It was a startling front page announcement, and it was a special type of garlic. For all of us who love garlic, we certainly love to cook with it and so on. We've heard about it, all of its medicinal properties, lowering cholesterol, many of these other things that garlic does. But when we look back at the studies now, we see that garlic, it's only the fresh crushed garlic that seemed to be working in the clinical studies. When we get to the garlic pills, most of the studies are failing in regards to heart disease, cholesterol, and some of the other health benefits of garlic. And the reason is the garlic pills are missing the key ingredient. The chief primary active ingredient in garlic is allicin, A-L-L-I-C-I-N. And it's allicin that's activated by a little enzyme when you crush a garlic clove. So if you want a real simple, inexpensive answer to some things that you can do, a garlic clove freshly crushed for a few minutes will retain some sort of allicin content, and that's the component that is antiviral. It kills bacteria, viruses, funguses, protozoa, amoebas, all form, that's five phyla we call them, of of germs as we know them, pathogenic organisms. And of course, there's no other molecule like allicin. And it was this British company about a year ago that took a new garlic pill that was able to capture for the first time real allicin. Now, all the consumers out there and the listeners might want to go grab a box of garlic pills and take a look, and it'll say allicin potential on the side, which we call allicin pretend. And now the government even had a giant symposium and said, basically, after testing all the garlic supplements, they really provide no allicin at all. They don't have allicin in them. In the acid environment of the stomach, there's no allicin there. But this new garlic supplement has real allicin in it. It's been proven both by chromatography and proven in laboratory dishes where it's actually killed bugs where we can observe it, and now proven in a double-blind, placebo-controlled clinical study in Britain. That's the highest measure of scientific credibility. And it was shown to, of course, reduce the risk of the common cold, reduce the number of days of symptoms. And that product is called Allimax, and it's here in this country for the first time. And I, for all your listeners, we're going to tell you this certainly isn't a treatment. We haven't proven anything. But we can tell you, since it's active against all form of pathogens, it is also active in a test tube against anthrax. It's active against vaccinia, which is cowpox, which is, of course, what they use to vaccinate you with for smallpox. So it's active really against every known, what we call, pathogen, germ, those ones that, the germs that come out and cause disease in us. There's no germ it can't kill, as we like to say. Now you might say, well, if you prove that in a test tube, that's not as good as the antibiotic drugs we use. Well, you understand, they can't use Cipro or penicillin or streptomycin in human studies for smallpox or anthrax. We can't give people those diseases and see if it cures them. They test all of these things in a test tube, just like they have this new garlic supplement or just like they have fresh garlic. And it's the allicin component that has all of these health properties, as well as having all of those other health properties you hear about for the cardiovascular system, lowering cholesterol, certainly keeping blood sugar levels normal, keeping your blood pressure normal, normalizing your blood pressure. All those health qualities attributed to allicin, not just garlic itself. This new food supplement, it's available now. I know all your listeners will want to know. The manufacturers have got a hold of us and said, listen, if we'd mention their phone number on the air, they'd give your listeners some sort of special offer. So there is a phone number they can call, which is 866-405-4000. They want to learn more about Allimax. It's the brand new garlic supplement here from Britain. All of this backed up by great science. If you want to read about it, learn about it more, you can go to my website, askbillsardi.com, and you can click on a little icon there to learn more in a report all about Allimax and all of the good properties of garlic. Believe me, the inexpensive way to do it is just crush fresh cloves of garlic. But this is a non-odorous form of garlic supplement. It really works. You can take as many as you'd like. It won't cause odor like a typical garlic clove will. And it's really wonderful, and they're offering something special for your listeners if they'll all call. That's 866-405-4000. They promised me they'd make this offer to you. So it's a wonderful thing, and we're just trying to alert certainly all your listeners out there to this new development. You actually have a germ fighter in your own hands. You don't have to run to the doctor, get prescriptions. It's something you can use. That doesn't mean you won't need treatment for diseases and things that occur. We're just trying to arm people with something in their own hands so they're not left empty-handed, because we know if there was a run, if there was a demand on our healthcare system we couldn't handle, well, what are we going to do? And we must understand that the antibiotics we use today, the germs are becoming resistant to them. Whether it's anthrax or whatever it is, the germs are learning to mutate around the magic bullet antibiotics that we've been using for decades. They're not working. We're all going to end up using these natural antibiotics, in particular this wonderful molecule called allicin, the first company to capture it. is out of Britain. They call it Alamax. You can learn more about it at 866-405-4000. I think you've tried it, haven't you, Dr.
Yes,
Stan?
I have, and I've been, well, because I've only taken it for about 2 weeks, and I can't testify to anything other than the fact that it's a small capsule, and it's sure easy, a lot easier than most of the capsules my wife has been giving me for a long time. Well, anyway, of course, you know, now you mentioned something about cholesterol. Has it been shown at least that allicin or that a garlic will help cholesterol? Now,
no,
I don't, Jerry, you don't really have any specific studies on Alamax per se on cholesterol, do you?
Not yet on Alamax per se, but we do know now when they did the studies on cholesterol, now this has been 10 years of studies, the latest studies starting in the year 1998 and then on through to the year 2000 and then currently, most of the garlic pills are failing those cholesterol tests. And early on, we thought garlic was great, and of course, we were confusing fresh garlic with the commercial garlic pills. And now we're kind of sorting it out and understanding this. Our problem is we don't have the active ingredient. When we take in a laboratory dish or in animals where we can control the circumstances and get real allicin in the animals or in a study where we can use research-grade allicin, then there's no question it lowers cholesterol significantly. One of the little ways they fib on these tests is they have the, in a human study, they'll have them, you know, improve their diet and take a garlic pill. Well, it's the improved diet, of course, it's a low-fat diet that's bringing about the cholesterol reduction. So when they look at the real garlic effects, it's moderate at best, if any at all, and that's just because it lacks the allicin. Where all of the studies show real allicin was used, it was a significant cholesterol reduction capability. And along with that, cholesterol is like a little wax that lines the blood vessels, and therefore the blood vessels can't get a little hormone secreted by the adrenal glands to dilate them or widen them up, and therefore the pressure will remain high in the blood vessel. It can't dilate, and therefore people end up with high blood pressure. So this is why a good fresh garlic with allicin or this new Alamax capsule potentially would both remedy cholesterol and high blood pressure at the same time. So it's a really wonderful development.
All right, fine, and I certainly look forward to, you know, the studies that would show that. But certainly there is a double-blind study on the use in colds. That was really quite impressive. And even though the people got colds, they certainly got over them very, very quickly. And what, about only half the treated group compared with the whole group,
right,
got colds, and then of those that did get colds, they were very, very short.
That's correct. And of course, understand, I there was a drug company a few months ago made an application to the Food and Drug Administration for their drug that was going to cure the common cold, and it was, of course, denied by the Food and Drug Administration. It was not considered even a safe drug, let alone it didn't really work. So here we have the world's first proven cold remedy, and we're in a common cold. We're going to get 200 common colds in our lifetime. We're going to spend 2 to 3 years of our lifetime with the sniffles and symptoms of a cold. So, you know, I think it's significant that we might have something that would cut that in half and reduce the number of days when we do get symptoms. And, of course, the world's ignoring it. We do see a lot of this kind of thing, information that just simply doesn't filter through the news press, doesn't get here from Europe or wherever, ignored in the medical literature when it's a significant breakthrough. And, of course, I guess that's why I have a job, is to study these things and bring them to people. It's all going to be on the 700 Club CBN News here in a couple of weeks. So Galen Tetherow, their crack medical reporter, will be releasing this wonderful report, first time to U.S. news media, all about Alamax, this wonderful capsule, and about the powers of allicin. Of course, garlic, a God-given herbal remedy for centuries, and now we've uncovered the fact that it's allicin is the active component in there that really provides all the health benefits. And from a historical standpoint, it was Louis Pasteur in 1858 who discovered that a garlic clove freshly crushed, put into a laboratory dish, killed germs. That was observed in 1858. But unfortunately, we gave the credit for the first germ killer or antibiotic drug was penicillin in 1922. We gave the credit to Alexander Fleming for penicillin, which was a mold-based product. So you see, actually, it was garlic in 1858, beat the discovery by 8 decades, but of course the drug companies wanted something they could patent and declare as something that, you know, hit the history books. But actually, garlic was the first proven antibiotic. If we go way back to Bible times, this was used as a cleanser along with other types of herbs. Hyssop was known in the Bible. You know, they actually came back from a war during the Bible times, and they burned their all their clothing, and then they cleansed their instruments of war with hyssop and other types of herbs and garlic and so on, because they knew it carried some sort of disease with it. Now, of course, they couldn't see germs at that time. We didn't have microscopes till about 1600, 1700. So, but they certainly knew germs were there. So disinfection was being practiced at the time, and they certainly knew how to go after it. They had certain herbs, and in particular, garlic was the main one that they used at the time. So this knowledge has been around for a long time. We're just cracking the inside of garlic and understanding that garlic only temporarily for a few minutes makes something called allicin, and it's only after we freshly crush it. And, of course, this first company, of course, has figured out how to detain it or preserve it in a capsule, and now we have it available for our use. And I think it's going to be great news for people that can't afford health insurance, can't run to the doctor all the time, and certainly for everyone. We have to think there's over 1 million food poisonings in a year. There's waterborne type disease, the cryptosporidium, giardia in water supplies. We should have something on hand. If anything, if we're the immune compromised, if our immune system isn't up to par, we might want to take this stuff, you know, before we came down with an infection. So I think it'd be a great idea for all of us. 50% of the American public has a little bug in their digestive tract called H. pylori. It not only causes gastric ulcers, but in the last year, they've now identified it as the germ that causes stomach cancer. Now, you can't go down to the doctor and get a prescription for antibiotics to kill that bug, because if we do that, there's going to be antibiotic-resistant bacteria, H. pylori, in your digestive tract, and then we can't kill it, and you'll get stomach cancer, and we've got no way to stop it. So, you see, what garlic does is allow us to use something at home for the first time in a prophylactic or preventive way. It does not induce germ resistance. Through all the decades and centuries of using garlic, there has never been any germ resistant. It's a natural molecule versus a synthetic molecule in the drugs, the antibiotic drugs. So the germs cannot mutate around it, and this, as I say, because of antibiotic resistance, we're losing 14,000 lives unnecessarily in hospitals every year now due to this superbug problem. We call it germ resistance or antibiotic resistance. And it simply could all be a remedy if we'd use these natural antibiotics. That's what we're going to get down to using. We're going to throw away the penicillin, the streptomycins, all the vancomycins, all these drugs that you heard about. They're all being rendered useless. And we're going to have to rely on nature, and nature has one wonderful molecule called allicin.
Well, of course, you know, if you did have a Fulman septicemia, at least you could would want to try the antibiotics, but you could also use the allicin right along with it. There'd be no harm at all.
Well, and this is what the drug companies, we foresee, they're going to do. They're going to actually do that.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment. When we get back, we'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and this is the time when I have to mention that Radio Liberty is listener-supported primarily, and if you're out there in the listening audience, we hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours every day, and then our programs on Saturday, and overall we're heard about 50 different outlets across America. Now, admittedly, many of these programs are just heard half an hour a week. But at least people are hearing the truth that they're not going to get elsewhere, and that's our job, is to bring the truth to the American people, to make them realize that, unfortunately, many of our major networks are controlled by people who have an agenda. And part of that agenda is to keep the people from learning the truth, to keep them understanding what this war is all about, to keep them from understanding the spiritual nature of the battle in which we're engaged, to keep them from understanding what's happened to the message of Christianity and the traditional music of Christianity, and why we seem to be losing our freedom, and why the America we grew up in just doesn't seem to exist anymore. Well, that's the job of Radio Liberty, to explain to you the forces that work behind the scenes. And certainly I've studied these for many years. And in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, our video, our audio tape by that name, we go into the background of these dark and sinister spiritual forces that dominate the world from behind the scenes. And really, ladies and gentlemen, there is a conspiracy. There has always been a conspiracy. It's a conspiracy basically against God. And you'll find it mentioned in Jeremiah 11:9 and Ezekiel 22:25. And, of course, this second psalm talks about how the kings of the earth are gathered together and to deride God. And there are people there who hate the Bible, who hate Christianity. And, of course, their objective is to destroy it. That's what's behind the taking God and prayer out of our schools. But, of course, they succeeded not because they were so clever, but because of the silence of the churches, of the good people. And so we've allowed what's happened to happen. Can we turn it around? Well, our job is to inform people in the final analysis. This would be God's decision. But God certainly is never going to intervene on our side unless we are worthy. And does anybody really think that America is worthy today? Do our pulpits flame with righteousness as they once did? Is America still great? Because it is good, or has America ceased to be great? Is America ceasing to be good? Well, we hope that many of you will decide you want to join the Radio Liberty family and help us get the truth out across America. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, we would be glad to send you one. That's or the Radio Liberty newsletter, if you haven't taken it before. You can ask for either the probably the September newsletter. I think the September newsletter, which is just going out now, a little delayed, but it's a very important letter because it will explain to you everything going on in America today. You have our permission to copy that newsletter. Please give out as many copies as you possibly can because it will make people, it will help them to understand what's going on. So if you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, my number 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And, of course, we hope that many of you will want to partner with us. We hope that you'll go to our website at radioliberty.com where you can listen to our programs. Well, you can listen 3 hours a day and link to the other 2 hours. You'll listen 5 hours a day and not get anything at all accomplished. But, of course, tell others about our website and the information that's available there. And we'll be back in just a moment with our very special guest, Mr. Bill Sardi. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and before I go on, I just want to mention that on the 23rd of November at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course, we're going to be having an all-day session. It's going to doors are going to open at 8 o'clock in the morning. Program will start at 8:45. It'll go to 5. There's going to be a lunch. There's going to be a syllabus provided. One of our speakers is none other than Bill Sardi, who's with us this evening. So we hope that many of you will want to come and bring others. The basic thrust of our program is going to be how to be prepared for the difficult times that lie ahead. First of all, you have to understand what the other side is up to, what their objectives and goals are, what their vision of the world is. And, of course, their vision of the world is a world with far, far, far fewer people in it than exist today. They've envisioned the world as it existed before the evil white man came. What do they intend to do with the population? Well, what you need to do is come to the program and listen to what's said. Again, that's going to be the 23rd of November. That's the weekend before Thanksgiving. And, of course, we hope that you'll come. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. If you're out of the area, of course, we'll provide a map for you. That's the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. It's an all-day seminar. I think you'll find it fascinating. Some of our favorite speakers will be there, Bill Sardi, Joan Paris, Jeannie Soderman, yours truly, I'm Brad Dacus. And so please let us know so we can begin making our plans. Again, the number 1-800-5-HIV-WAR because America is at war today. And now let's get back to Bill Sardi, who really is a health writer. He studies the various things that have to do with alternative medicine and general health. He has an excellent website. It's Ask Bill Sardi. Is that .com or .org?
.com.
That's AskBillSardi.com. And certainly I don't know anybody who knows this field better than Bill does. So if you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question for Bill, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And you know, one of the things that really always amazed me as a physician was the realization that so many of the things we look upon every day, the flowers, the roots, the bulbs, so many of these have medicinal purposes. Certainly the beautiful flower of belladonna, that is the basis of atropine. Certainly the foxglove flower is the basis of digitalis. And so many of the flowers and the stems and so many of the things there have medicinal purposes. Certainly, echinacea has certain properties that seem to help people when they get infections. But garlic is something that certainly has been known for, well, it's really been known since almost the beginning of time, hasn't it?
Well, really, as far as we can go back, I mean, the Egyptians actually paid their workers with onions and garlic. That's what they paid them with. So as far as we can go back in history and antiquity, it was used, and they knew how to use it. It wasn't just a spice. And in fact, at Yale University now, they've done a study. It's a couple of years back, and what they showed is the societies that did use spices, particular types, had less infectious disease, particularly intestinal parasites, but other types of infections as well. And the four herbs that, of course, came to the top of the list that virtually killed every known bacterium that they could test were onions, oregano, garlic, and allspice. Those were the four. And, of course, they're right there in the kitchen cupboard. We might use them someday in an emergency. As more time goes on and we learn what the active ingredients are in there and how to use them and what doses, of course, those spices are probably going to replace the antibiotics that we get down at the doctor's office.
Well, now, what about oil of oregano? What about echinacea?
Oil of oregano is very similar and akin to garlic. Garlic is better tested and has better history. We don't have all the evidence that oregano lowers cholesterol or helps your blood pressure or helps you regulate your blood sugar levels like the allicin component of garlic does. So we don't know those things yet. We certainly do know that oregano is maybe equal to the germ-fighting ability of allicin in garlic. So we do know that. And, of course, these are excellent, whether you've got yeast-borne infections or fungus infections, like we tend to get in we call it candida in the digestive tract, or whether, you know, it's a fungus under your toenail or things like this, you're going to find that these natural agents work far better, of course, than what we can get down at the pharmacy. And, of course, this is what we're going to rely on. The more we rely on the patentable prescription antibiotics, the more we're going to develop this resistance problem. And then, of course, it's going to lead, really, to many premature deaths and so on. So we're really going to all be forced in medicine to go back to these natural molecules that man once used on a regular basis.
All right, fine. Well, of course, now, what about echinacea? Where does it...
Oh, yes, okay. Well, echinacea is a wonderful immune booster. We see it that way. Many people try to take it prophylactically, or that is, preventively. One of the secrets of echinacea is that it helps promote or hold on to or retain something called hyaluronic acid in your body. Hyaluronic acid is the water-holding molecule, which is a barrier against all disease, and water will dilute anything. It dilutes bugs, germs, anything, but it creates a barrier. It holds the connective tissue together, that is, the very stuff that's in between all your cells. So if you'd like a barrier against a disease, you take echinacea, it doesn't matter whether it's cancer or infectious disease. So echinacea is really a wonderful guardian to help preserve and hold on to our connective tissue, particularly a type of water-holding molecule called hyaluronic acid. And that's how it works. And of course, it's safe to take and used by many people. Some people say don't take it all the time, but I'm becoming less of that opinion, and I believe maybe we should be taking more and more echinacea as we understand how wonderful that herb is.
All right, fine. Somebody had called in and wanted to know about chlorine in the water. We certainly chlorinate our water. One of the great advantages of, living in the United States is our water is fairly safe. If you go down to Mexico, you immediately get Montezuma's revenge. And going into many countries in the world, the water isn't safe. One reason we have safe water is we chlorinate it. But are there deleterious effects of that water chlorination?
Well, it certainly are. Now, understand, waterborne disease is a great part of disease in the whole world. It's the major part of disease. There's a little bug. Leishmaniasis is the little bug that is throughout China, Egypt, all the water. It's a little bug, parasite, gets in your digestive tract. Boy, that's really terrible. Now, if we could just chlorinate water, which is what happened in this country, in the United States, we began to chlorinate the water in 1908, and like I previously said, we wiped out dysentery and cholera and typhoid, three major diseases right there. The problem with chlorine is it really needs to come right up to the tap, guard our water from having any bugs in it, and then as we open the faucet and get the water, we need to dechlorinate it right there and then drink it or use it. Because, now, understand, if we heat or boil it, you'll get the chlorine out of there. But If you're drinking tap water, over your lifetime, chlorine being used in tap water, this is not an immediate hazard, but a long-term, lifelong hazard. And where does chlorine accumulate? Your bladder, your kidneys, and your rectum. So it's responsible, the chlorine is responsible for 20,000 new cases of bladder cancer a year, another 10, 15,000 cases of kidney and rectal cancer. So essentially, you might call chlorine a carcinogen long term. Now, all the municipal water companies assure you the water's wonderful, it's germ-free, but it's a long-term carcinogen. Please, the people that sell these water filters are not crazy. They may overhype their products a little bit, but please, dechlorinate your water. Use the filter systems, use whatever system you'd like, but get the chlorine out of there because it's not great for your family. Certainly not good. It's toxic to your bladder and your kidneys and so on. And certainly take a lot more vitamin C because it helps counter some of the effects of chlorine in your system.
So, of course, it's really a trade-off, you know. You certainly have to have safe water. And, of course, there are deleterious effects whenever we begin to interfere with the normal course of things. So, 10 or 20,000 cases of one or another disease compared with the millions of lives we save from these other diseases is certainly a good trade-off. But you have to realize it is a trade-off, and if there's a means of readily filtering the water, you're certainly far better off to do it. Now, some cities, there's just hardly any chlorine at all. You can't even taste it. You go into some cities, and you can barely drink the water, for the horrible, horrible chlorine taste and smell.
Well, and when they're having a problem is when you taste more chlorine in there. That means there is a problem because they're having to over-chlorinate the water. And, of course, it was kind of interesting how Milwaukee found out they had a cryptosporidium outbreak, very dangerous bug because there's really no antibiotics that kill it. By the way, Allicin and garlic kills it, or this new Alamax capsule they invented, it kills cryptosporidium. But they found out about it in an odd way. The pharmacists were all reporting that the Pepto-Bismol in the Imodium for diarrhea had run out through the entire town. And, of course, then they were starting to report there must be something going on here, massive cases of diarrhea, and that's how they discovered this giant, of course, waterborne disease. And, of course, it killed some people in Milwaukee. They really didn't have an early warning system. Actually relied on the pharmacist to tell them what the problem was.
Now, of course, those are primarily people with an altered immune system, AIDS patients, who, with no immunity at all, just couldn't fight this infection.
That's correct. And, of course, understand, once you get these infections, the reason why we're not fighting them effectively is that the antibiotics aren't working as well now. So, and particularly in hospitals, where are the antibiotic-resistant germs? In hospitals, it's the last place you ever want to go. It's maybe one of the most dangerous places you could possibly go. And, of course, who's immune compromised but those that are ill and are hospitalized? So it's a terrible situation. We're losing many lives just because we're overcommitted to drug companies and patentable molecules and millions of dollars of profits and everybody making money on their stocks and drug companies. But frankly, we just got to get back to nature here. And this wonderful development, for the people listening that want to hear about this Alamax capsule, this wonderful thing that has the allicin in it, certainly has no drug resistance, no history of it. You can now have it in your home antibiotic cabinet. Just keep it there as a home remedy. You can take it every day, any way you want it. And that phone number for your listeners was 866-405-4000, 866-405-4000.
All right, fine. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, our guest today is Bill Sardi. And, of course, you go to his website. It's askbillsardi.com. A lot of fascinating material there. And Bill has written actually a couple of books. I know we have one book he's written on the effects of iron. We have another book you wrote on certainly on biblical things and food. And what was that all about?
Well, of course, we wanted to examine health through history, you know, and of course, what healing was. We think we need a new definition of healing, and of course, what were all these healings that were in the Old Testament and the New Testament and during the era of the apostles? Were they real? Were they phony? Did modern medicine now disprove all the healings that were in the Bible? Actually not. Actually, some of them are wonderfully confirmed. So wonderful to read about in light of modern science and so on. And of course, and other things we explored were the failures of modern medicine, some of the issues dealing with faith healing and so on. So it was a wonderful book to be involved in. You can see it there at my website, askbillsardi.com, if you're interested in getting a copy of it. The Power of Healing is the name of the book. So, you know, we've had a wonderful time, of course, exploring all these things, basically for the curious-minded who don't have time to go look for themselves. So we kind of feel like we're on a mission for everyone else and kind of investigating and finding things that don't cost a lot of money, things that aren't problematic, and things they can do to stay healthy without costing them a fortune. And that's what we're trying to do.
And, of course, you basically spend almost full time just reading and studying about the alternative medicines, don't you?
Well, absolutely. Of course, this is where we must go. You understand, we have millions now with no health insurance. Certainly the rest of the world cannot. Just alone, there are 50 million people in the world with cataracts, another 50 million in China with cataracts alone, blinding cataracts. We couldn't train enough surgeons in the next 100 years to take out all those cataracts. As wonderful as lens implant surgery is today, we don't have the money or the surgeons to possibly do that many operations at any time. Better that we prevent all this. Now we find if you had 300 milligrams of vitamin C in your diet every day, you're going to have to get a food supplement to get that much. Can't get it out of your diet, and you'd reduce the risk of cataracts by 77 to 83%. Our only chance of being healthy in our lifetime. We can't deliver all the health care. We simply, no society has the money to deliver the health care. We must stay healthy. That's the only way. We can't keep getting sick and running to doctors.
All right. Right now we've got Paula calling in from Washington, and I was just commented in China, there have been 700 million people, over half the population, have had hepatitis B there, and I think 1,200,000. Almost not quite half the population in the United States, have active hepatitis B. How did they get it? Why they got it from use of dirty needles, getting their vaccine shots, using the needles over and over again, spreading the disease from person to person to person. Are vaccines beneficial? Some of them are. Some of them are no place at all for them. In fact, they're very dangerous. But the fact that almost over half the population of China contracted hepatitis B infection, and primarily from the use of dirty needles during vaccination. Over 200 million people throughout the world with hepatitis C from the same cause. It gives you a serious question. Are we doing more harm or more good from some of the things we're doing in the name of doing good? We've got Paula calling us from Washington right now. Hi, Paula. How are you doing?
Fine, I guess. Mr. Sardi, I'd like to know what you recommend for a sinus infection.
Okay, sinus infections may be bacterial. Most of the time, the chronic ones are what we call fungal infections. Bacterial or fungal, something natural that you can take at home to give it a try would be something like oil of oregano or this new Alamax capsule. You can try that. You take it orally and just keep taking it for quite some time. You may need to take it for 90 days or so to try to beat back these fungal infections that get into the sinuses. The sinuses are little cavities with a small opening, and of course it's hard to get the antibiotics in there. You know, a couple of months ago I thought I was getting a sinus infection for the first time in my life. I actually diluted some oil of oregano, got a bulb syringe, and pushed it up my nose, and I'll tell you, it was gone in 10 minutes. So you knew it. The bite of the infection was gone, the sting that was gone. So, you know, we can use some of these natural remedies safely as long as we, you know, use judicious reason and common sense. And, of course, they're not harmful to us.
Now, of course, you know, if you have a high temperature and, you know, it's almost like an abscess, why, of course, you better get to the doctor. But, you know, for our mild things, try to treat them as much as you can on your own. Anything else, Paula?
Yes, the oil of oregano. How would you dilute that? What to what?
Oh, you know, there's different concentrations, but I would just use a 4-to-1 dilution.
4-to-1?
Yeah, okay. Water, 4 parts of water and 1 of oregano, yeah.
Now, how much oil of oregano would you think, and how much Alamax?
Oh, oil of oregano orally, I mean, if you're going to take it orally.
Is that what you're recommending, orally?
Yeah, orally it comes liquid. You'd take a couple of drops twice a day. It also comes in capsules. You take 2 capsules twice a day. Again, you do it twice a day to keep the blood levels up. Or Alamax, 1 capsule twice a day. It's a real tiny little capsule. It's easier to take and so on. By the way, for everyone listening who's worried about West Nile virus, that's transmitted to you by mosquitoes, you get any kind of fresh garlic or this new Alamax capsule in you, believe me, the bugs are not going to want to jump on you. As you know, garlic actually oozes out of the skin if we get too much of it. But unbeknownst to us, even if we're not developing odor, which we won't with the new Alamax capsule, but there's an odor sensed by the insects. And believe me, they're not going to get anywhere near you. So if you want to protect yourself from any kind of insect bites or the West Nile, which is transmitted by mosquitoes, you get this Alamax capsule in your system, get fresh garlic in your system. Of course, the Alamax has the advantage of not having all the odor. But any way you go, get the garlic in your system. Believe me, the bugs won't want you.
Okay, anything else, Paul?
Did you say you had a special tonight on the Alamax?
Well, you just call that telephone number.
Yeah, the manufacturer does. We're just trying to help you find them. So if you'd like to call them, that's 866-405-4000.
All right.
Well,
thank you.
Anything else?
That's all.
Thank you. And that was Paula. And I think she's a first-time caller. I don't recall her being with us before, but certainly these are interesting, interesting subject, and especially in times like this. Now, most Americans really don't believe that anything bad could ever happen to this country. And I would simply ask, why do you believe that? Well, because, you know, this is America. Well, we've, I think, been protected through the years. We've been so fortunate. We did not see the devastation of the First or Second World War here. That all took place over in Europe or in the Far East. But, of course, at that time and during that period, America was a Christian nation. That is no longer the case. And I believe that when a nation turns its back on God, God turns its back on the nation, and terrible things begin to befall that nation. And one of them I fear, and I really do, and I have been referring to this or inferring, suggesting that sometime, that there will be a biological attack. Certainly we are being prepared for one by the mass media. They keep insisting there's going to be smallpox or anthrax or something is going to happen. And all I can say, and the only reason we're doing a program like this, is to suggest that you begin thinking ahead now and begin preparing yourself, because, of course, if there are problems, you may find a great deal of difficulty getting hold of these supplies. This is the time to do it right now. We've got Gloria calling from Spokane. Hi, Gloria. How are you doing?
Hi. I just wanted to tell you that I successfully mixed the oil of oregano with flaxseed oil.
You did.
And then it's easy to take, because otherwise it's really hot and burning.
Yes, it can be. And, of course, the garlic product's much easier to take, I can tell you that one. But
But this is not hard to take at all.
Oh, good.
Well,
thank you. Thank you for the tip. I'm actually writing it down because I think it's worth it.
I just put a couple drops of the oil of oregano into a teaspoon, and then I just put the flaxseed on top of that, and it just goes down smoothly.
Now, of course, the flax for our listeners is one of the essential oils, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and of course, we'd all benefit from having a little bit of that in our system, too.
Okay, in fact, all of these things are so important, and you're not getting them in a regular diet. And so, we always used to laugh at the health food enthusiasts, and now I'm looking at them and I'm saying, I think an awful lot of this was, pretty smart. Maybe we should listen to what some of these people are saying. Anything else, Gloria?
No, I listened to him on Saturday too, and I'm learning more and more. And I love his website, Bill Sardi's website.
Would you like to have him? Should we have him back on again?
Oh, please do. And I wish you'd talk about Why Babies Die, the book you wrote.
Oh, thank you. Maybe we will someday.
Okay.
It's about sudden infant death syndrome, and of course, the answer to that was in the Bible a few thousand years ago. We'll have to come back and share that with
you. Oh, that's fascinating. Okay, well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Gloria. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, you've got a few admirers up there in the state of Washington, and there, of course, this program reaches the northeastern part of Oregon and certainly the western part of Idaho. Well, Bill, we're out of time. I want to thank you so very, very much for being with us this evening.
You bet. I hope we come back soon.
Oh, you will. Don't you worry about it. Okay, fine. And our guest this evening has been Bill Sardi. And, of course, this is the time when we're going to have to tell our listeners up there in the great Northeast or ask them if they will pray for America, pray for revival in America, because that's the only thing that's going to turn this country around. And, of course, we're not going to have revival unless people know there's a problem. The people don't ordinarily turn to God unless they realize that they are sinners and their only hope is salvation offered by our Lord. And that's why God came to earth, so that no one would perish. But we don't talk much about hell or sin or a just God anymore. We simply have a loving God. Nothing bad ever happens to Christians. And if you believe that, you're in for a big surprise. Well, until tomorrow, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills, overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. Well, right now, of course, I want to just mention that we're going to have a program out at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course on the 23rd of November. That's the week before Thanksgiving, and it's going to be all day long. Going to start at 8 o'clock in the morning. Outdoors will open. We'll certainly start the program at 8:45. We will actually go until 5 o'clock. There will be a luncheon served. There will be a syllabus for everybody, and we hope that every one of you out there in the listening audience will want to sign up and come and bring your friends, because we're going to talk about, well, what's the future is holding, what is going to be happening, the things that you ought to do to begin planning how you are going to get through the difficult times that lie ahead. And, of course, we are to make all the preparations we can as an individual. And the final analysis, of course, we're going to have to rely on our Lord, but we would be foolish not to make preparations. After all, people have said, well, everything is in God's hands. You don't have to be involved. But they all have health insurance. They all have, of course, life insurance, and most of them do. They have fire insurance on their homes, but, of course, they tell you everything is in God's hands. Don't you do anything in preparation? Unfortunately, I think there's a lot of bad advice being given today. So if you are out there in the listening audience, you're concerned, you'd like to come to beautiful Santa Cruz, one of the most beautiful spots in the world here on the North Shore of Monterey Bay, we're going to have that meeting, and, of course, we hope all the local people will want to be coming. And again, that'll be on November the 23rd from 8 in the morning, starting at 8:45 until 5 in the evening. And we look forward to seeing you there. Give us a call so we'll know you're going to be there. You have to make your reservation ahead of time. Again, the number 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Well, you know, there's probably hardly a day goes by I don't get a call from somewhere across America, and people say, I can't find a local church, you know, that's really preaching the gospel today. I mean, so many of them, they've changed the message and the music of the church. And, you know, do you know a church here in South Podunk, Idaho, or, you know, in upper Arkansas, a good church I can go to? And I have to quite frankly tell them I don't. We really don't have a list of churches in those areas. Now, I feel very, very fortunate to have found a church that they preach the gospel and adhere to the Word of God and the traditional teachings of the Bible, but there are a lot of churches that where this is not going on today. In fact, there's a lot of churches that are into management techniques, and we are going to teach ministers how to market Christianity. And we're not going to tell people, well, we're never going to tell them sinners. That would be the worst thing, because you tell somebody they're a sinner, they're not going to feel good about themselves. And we want to give them sort of a happy gospel. We want to teach them how to get along in life, how to be successful, how to get ahead in the world, and how God is going to bless them if they, of course, remember Malachi's problems that those who give to a church, of course, will benefit. And unfortunately, we seem to have gotten away from the traditional message of the scriptures, and that is we're all sinners saved by grace. But we have to be saved by grace, and if we're not saved by grace, we're in real trouble, because none of us, of course, deserve to be admitted to the kingdom of heaven. And that old question, what would you say if you were standing before the gates of heaven tomorrow, and St. Peter would say, why should you be allowed into heaven? What would you say? Well, I've been a good person. Well, who of us is good enough to be admitted to heaven, into the presence of a truly holy God? And none of us are. We're all sinners, but we are saved by the sacrifice of God's Son for our salvation. Well, of course, our guest this evening is Maurice Smith, and Maurice lives up in the Idaho area there. He's a friend of our John Leffler, who's a frequent guest on Radio Liberty, and he is very concerned about what's happening to the church. And, of course, he is trying to coordinate the home churches, which are growing all across America, because in certain areas you can't find a good church. And people are beginning, as they do in China and in nations throughout the world, to go into home churches. Maurice, thank you so much for being with us this evening.
You're very welcome, Dr. Stan. Thanks for having me on.
Now, you are actually a seminary graduate, aren't you?
Yeah, I confess.
All right,
confess.
Fine. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Because this is your first time on Radio Liberty, and I hope it won't be your last time. But why don't you tell our listeners who you are, what you do, and how you got interested in trying to bring people to the Lord through the technique that is being used so effectively in communist China today, where it's estimated that there may be as many as 80 million Chinese attending home churches.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, boy, that's a lot to cover.
In 30 words or less now. No, go ahead.
Yeah.
You take as much time as you want.
I do want to address the Chinese situation because there are some exciting things happening there. But just to give you a quick history, I grew up in North Carolina, went to the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, graduated, went on staff with a group you may be familiar with down in Southern California, used to be in Southern California, called Campus Crusade for Christ.
Sure, Bill Bryce.
And spent a couple of years on staff with them, then got married. My wife and I went on to Denver, where I attended Denver Baptist Seminary. Now they just call it Denver Seminary. They're slowly dropping the Baptist, but it's a conservative Baptist seminary. And served on the adjunct faculty of the seminary for a couple of years. I designed their field education department and taught Christian apologetics as adjunct faculty there at the seminary. Left and moved up here to the Pacific Northwest. I live in Spokane, Washington. And went into business for several years. And then through a series of events about 7 years ago, God began changing my course. And I'd like to tell people I fell into the house church movement through the back door. Because it was not my intention to explore the house church movement. But I wrote a book in 1995 entitled Preparing to Survive the New Age, New World Order. And it's now out of print. And a friend of mine, Chuck Missler, at the Koinonia House, helped sell all the books through his constituency. And it was very well received. And it was basically a book on Christian preparedness. And through the process of that, thinking through some of the things that you discuss here on your program, you know, you opened up asking the question, how are we going to get through the difficult times that may lie ahead? And you've been speaking on that for years, and I've been writing on it since 1994, 1995, and telling people that the church is going to have some difficult times to go through. I began asking myself, well, if all this is true, if we genuinely believe we're moving into difficult times, and that our lives are going to radically change, what makes us think that our traditional institutional church is going to continue to function in the form that we've been used to? That there may come a time, for any number of reasons, that you're either unable to attend, or it's unsafe to attend, or our lives could change dramatically. And if that's the case, what are you going to do when it comes to church? And so that was my entrance through the back door. I began studying that. I began studying World War II resistance movements to see how people dealt with difficult times. I studied people such as Richard Wurmbrand, Tortured for Christ, the Romanian pastor, and read his paper on preparing for the underground church. I began asking myself the question, are things about to change in the world and in the church in such a way that it is going to dictate that we change the way we do things? And so that was my initial question. And as I began looking at it and praying over it and studying cell church movements out of Asia and house church movements in China, I began to realize that one of God's most effective forms of church is the form that we find in the New Testament, in the book of Acts, where they met house to house, and that was, in fact, the form of the church for the first 250 years up to the time of Constantine. And I believe that in a very real sense, God may be looking to take us back to that most effective form of church for the difficult times that may lie ahead. So that was my initial introduction, and I dove into the house church movement, not only just studying it, but realizing that I believed God was calling me to work in this area. And then as I did so, a lot of other things began to surface. The fact that 10 million born-again believers in America alone have simply dropped out of institutional churches. They're not going anymore. And they've either dropped out voluntarily or been given the left foot of fellowship or been asked to leave. Or I have people, and I could name names of people that you and I know, who've come to me and said, Maurice, I just can't do traditional church anymore. I just can't do it because they're not meeting my needs, but they're not addressing the issues at hand, and we've got to do something different. And so all of this is beginning to congeal, I believe, in a movement that is literally sweeping the world. It has swept through China in ways that you and I can scarcely imagine. And I'll come back to talk about the Chinese situation here in a little bit. But I believe that the church today, by church I mean the body of Christ, both visible and institutional, as well as the invisible body of Christ, I believe that we are standing today in the what I call the confluence of two great rivers. On the one hand, we have the river of world events that at times today looks like it is absolutely spinning out of control. And those events may drag us into situations that could radically change the way we live. Just look at the things that have happened since 9/11 and begin to multiply that. And world events are a raging river, and the church is standing in the middle of this river going, what do we do? How do we respond to this? In many ways, the church is being swept away. We're being overwhelmed by our culture. But there's another great river that I talk about, and that is what I call the river of God's Spirit. I was listening to the end of your program here at the previous hour up here in the Pacific Northwest where I live, and I just appreciate so much you're calling people to pray for revival, because I believe that God does desire and intend to send revival to his church. It's going to renew his church, and then that renewal is going to overflow as the Holy Spirit begins to convict the world of sin, righteousness, and judgment. But I believe that that may occur within the context, culturally, of some very disturbing, unsettling, and difficult times. And it's these two rivers coming together. We're standing at the confluence of these two rivers, and it's a very confusing time for a lot of people. And people are being frustrated. They're falling out of the institutional church. They don't know what to do. And I believe what God is doing is he's raising up a new vehicle that is in reality an old vehicle, and that is networking house churches that are going to be the channel for this movement of the Spirit of God. But in addition, it's the perfect model for weathering difficult times, as modeled by the early church in the first 250 years of the church, as modeled by the Chinese today and in other closed countries where they're meeting in house churches. It is what my friend Wolfgang Simpson, who wrote Houses That Change the World, he calls it a persecution-resistant model. And I believe he's absolutely right, and I believe that's one of the reasons that God is raising it up for the difficult times that we may be coming into. So that's Dr. Stan, that's kind of a quick summary.
Well, no, of course, I know some of the people, places across the country, have certainly gone into this, into home churches, and some of them, of course, will perhaps get a television sermon that's put out by a minister who's preaching the traditional gospel, or other people, of course, use audio tapes, or certainly with a service, of course, they may sing one or two hymns. They certainly... but how is the best way to do this? Is the best way to use the electronic facilities that are available today, either videos or audio tapes, or simply have somebody to try to compile a sermon, or even have a minister or a leader of the house church who gives a sermon? How is this being done across America?
Well, my answer would be all of the above plus more.
All right, fine.
I like to say there's no right way or wrong way to do it. I'll take that back. I think the one wrong way to do it is to try and do in your living room what you see done in an institutional church. One of the problems that the institutional church has created for itself and for us is a model of passivity, where basically we go on Sunday morning, we listen to a message, we stand up, sing a hymn, sit down, sing a hymn, pray a prayer, listen to a sermon, and then we go home. And a friend of mine, I was at a house church conference in Texas over the Labor Day weekend, and this fellow he just came back from spending several years working with the Chinese underground church. He said, you know, here in America, we equate attendance with faithfulness. And he said, you don't get that in the Chinese church. Everybody is involved because not only is their faith on the line, but their life is on the line. And so there are no pew sitters. And I think one of the things that we've done that's unfortunate here in the West is we've created generations of pew sitters who never really get involved in actually being the church. And that's one of the reasons why our culture is suffering so drastically, with the loss of the Judeo-Christian consensus. You know, I'm an old disciple of Francis Schaeffer. I cut my teeth on Francis Schaeffer and people like that in during my college days. And our culture is collapsing from the inside out, and much of it has to do with passivity among Christians, that we go to church, but we're not being the church. We're not doing the things that we need to do. And so my first rule in dealing with people who are looking to establish a house church is this: don't try to reproduce in your living room what you're seeing taking place on Sunday morning. What you've got to do is come together as a group of people whose desire it is to seek the Lord, learn how to worship together, learn how to pray together, learn how to be the church as opposed to going through the motions of doing church. Now, you can use tapes. If you want to listen to a good Bible teaching tape, or if you want to use it, there's some excellent videos out. Those are all good. They're all very useful. But what you don't want to do is create a new form of passivity there in your living room where we all sit and listen to a tape, or we all sit and watch. We need to be actively praying for one another. We need to be ministering to one another. We need to be finding out, where are you hurting that is preventing you from being effective for the Lord? If your marriage is struggling, tell us how we can pray for you. Why? Because we want to see you healed, and we want to see you move on in ministry. Because our culture, our civilization, is in desperate need of renewed homes and families where the gospel is real, is being lived out. If we don't transform our homes, we'll never transform our culture. If the gospel is not real at home, if we're not applying it and doing it at home, it's never going to work its way out into the society to where it transforms our society. And if our culture is ever going to be transformed, It's going to be because Christians stop going to church. As my friend Wolfgang likes to say, says we don't. He's a big gruff German fellow. He says we don't go to church. We are the church, and we need to start being the church in our homes and in our neighborhoods, because that long term, that's the only way we're ever going to transform our society. Now, on a practical side, just real quickly, we have created what we call a house church equipping manual. It's a notebook form. It's entitled Let the River Flow, an Introductory House Church Equipping Handbook. And it's about 150 pages. We have everything in there, from song sheets to how to pray for your neighborhood, a chapter on fasting and prayer for your neighbors, and how to do a section called Let's Do House Church. And it's designed to be very hands-on and practical. And so we offer that notebook through our website.
Well, why don't you give that website right now?
Yeah, it's our website is, of course, www.parousianetwork. That's P as in Peter, P-A-R-O-U-S-I-A, Parousia Network, one long word, parousianetwork.com. And you can click on there and just go to the item, the site menu on the left-hand side, and you can click on order that notebook, and there's a greeting there for your listeners. But the point is this: there are good materials coming online, ours and many others, and we have a whole resource page for that kind of material on our website.
Well, now,
that can help walk people through that.
Is the house church movement growing in America? This is something we don't hear very much about. Certainly I'm aware of it, but I have no idea how prevalent it is. The one thing I do know is that there are an awful lot of people out there who are very, very, very unhappy with the message that they're getting in their churches,
right,
with the new music, with the organizational techniques that are being used, with this idea that we want to feel good about ourselves, the fact that we no longer ever want to acknowledge that we're sinners, that everybody should feel good about themselves, as Robert Schuller said. Mm-hmm. Why, the worst thing you could ever tell anybody is that they're a sinner. And yet,
yeah,
of course, that was the message of Jonathan Edwards, a sinner in the hands of an angry God. And his sermons back in 1740 changed America, and a change led to the American Revolution. People don't understand that in the 100 years between the time that the first colony was established in Jamestown, I think about 1607, to the period 1740, why America had gone through tremendous prosperity and then to tremendous depravity. And it wasn't until Jonathan Edwards and one or two other ministers began really preaching a challenging message to people and pointing out that there really was punishment for sin and that a just God didn't want anybody to go to hell. But certainly if people were intent upon going there and they did not accept the free gift of salvation, that is where they were going to spend their eternity. And,
yeah,
of course, and it was his approach, sinner in the hands of an angry God, that sermon he read over and over and over again, that transformed this country and led to the American Revolution.
Yeah, and that great awakening that happened here in America was paralleled by what was called the Evangelical Awakening in England. And one of the fellows who led that, George Whitefield, who preached in the colonies numerous times and preached the same message. When he was preaching in England, it was funny. There's a story about how a bishop of London had a parishioner come to, well, not a parishioner, but one of his parish priests come to him and complain that all these folks were, it was Wesley. They were going out to hear Wesley. And this this bishop responded to his priest and said, well, if you preach Jesus Christ and him crucified, they'll have no reason to go hear Mr. Wesley. And George Whitefield had a similar occurrence where a bishop was complaining that Mr. Whitefield's message was a new and strange doctrine. And Whitefield responded to the bishop by saying, I have no doubt that my message is new and strange to the bishop. Unfortunately, it is the age-old message of salvation in Christ. And England was going through something not unlike what we're going through in America today, and that is extreme cultural decay, and the gospel was not being preached. There was a doctrine called latitudinarianism, which basically said give everybody a lot of latitude. We don't criticize each other. We tolerate each other, and we don't like these evangelical messages because that's very polarizing. And so when Whitefield and Wesley began to preach, they were shut out of the Anglican church almost completely, and so they took to preaching in the fields because that was the only way they could get their message out, and the result was a tremendous awakening that swept through England, and it lasted for 100 years.
And you know what's really...
the abolition of slavery, and just it transformed England for 100 years and saved it from the French, from the atrocities of the French Revolution. And we are in desperate need of something similar today, because I think you would agree that the only way the decline of Western civilization, or I should say the collapse of Western civilization, is going to be stemmed, if it is going to be stemmed, the only way to stem that tide is with a genuine movement of the Spirit of God and revival that convicts the world of sin, righteousness, and judgment, and returns us to the... to the biblical values that our nation was founded on. And I'm personally convinced that the only way we're going to, at this late date, the only way we're really going to see that happen is to see cultural transformation at its most basic level, which is the home and the family. And only as we see that take place will we see transformation begin to work its way through our homes, through our neighborhoods, and then through our communities at the most grassroots level. And that personally, that's what I'm praying for, and I believe that's the promise of the house church movement, is to see this grassroots transformation take place.
Well, of course, how do we reach people? Right now, of course, I do what I do 5 hours a day, because this is the only way I know of reaching people. Certainly the major television is controlled, so much of even Christian television I would describe as trite. And, of course, what I think we have is a few people out there, and I could count them probably on the fingers of my two hands, people, most of them are ministers. I'm not even a minister. I'm just a retired orthopedic surgeon. Others are certainly doing a great job. I think of David Smith. I think of Pastor Hutchings. I think, of course, Chuck Missler. I think a few people on the radio, but at least we're reaching out, and it is a voice, and it's not simply a voice crying in the wilderness, or if it is a voice crying in the wilderness, we have to remember that John the Baptist, of course, was a prelude to a dramatic changes that would affect Israel forever, and the world forever, for that matter.
Well, I believe what we're waiting for, Dr. Stan, and everything you've just said is very true. But I believe the missing element, and this is the difficult part, this is, let me call this the mysterious part, because it's hidden in the providence of God. I'm a student of revival. I've written a book on the Great Welsh Revival of 1904. The book is now out of print, but it is posted chapter by chapter on my website where people can read it. And I've become a lifelong student of the history of revival. And what you discover is somewhere in the mix, God drops a divine match into the mixture, and things suddenly explode in a way that just takes everyone's breath away. I saw it in the Great Awakening. I've seen it in the Second Great Awakening here in the United States following the Revolutionary War. Most people don't realize that after the Revolutionary War, our country was literally going to hell in a handbasket, spiritually. And God brought about a great awakening that started at Yale University under Jonathan Edwards' grandson.
Timothy Dwight?
Yeah, Timothy Dwight. Okay. And it swept through Yale University like a firestorm, to the point to where half of the student body went to the mission field by the time it was done. And it swept through the American South and turned it into the Bible Belt. That's why it's known as the Bible Belt. It's the leftover remnants of the Second Great Awakening that started in Logan and Bourbon County, Kentucky. And God just seems to drop a match into certain situations, and all of a sudden the world is aflame with the Spirit of God and people are coming to know Christ. And that's what I think many people are longing and hungering for. We don't see it yet. It's not there yet. But I believe it should be the prayer of every believer. You know, Lord, light the fire again, because we are in desperate need. I'll put it this way. If we don't have revival of historic proportions, of the kinds that I've just described, the Great Awakening, the Second Great Awakening, the Manhattan Prayer Revival of 1857-58, the Welsh Revival of 1904, if we don't have a movement of the Spirit of God of those dimensions or greater, our civilization will collapse into the dustbin of history, and we will look back, people will look back 100 years from now and say, wasn't that a shame, what happened to them?
Well, you know, I'm firmly convinced that we are entering momentous times. I think that we're being manipulated into a horrible, horrible war, a quagmire, a quicksand mm-hmm. of the Middle East. And, of course, when times are good, why most people don't need God. And when, of course, they don't think they need God, I should put it that way.
Right.
But, of course, when times get bad, and I will tell you an awful lot of people have lost so much of their security, or what they thought was security, with the collapse of the stock market. And I suspect, ladies and gentlemen, you haven't seen anything yet.
Oh, I agree 100%.
And we, at least, we have a small voice. And, of course, as things get worse, that voice can expand, and the voice of the other ministries can expand, and with your efforts, and we hope that you'll be with us again many, many times, we will at least touch some people's lives, and every person whose life is touched can touch others. And, of course, that has to be our hope. Maybe there'll be people out in the fields preaching once again, and trying to get the message out that way. As we had recently in Santa Cruz, this effort to go down to the boardwalk and have a skateboard situation where people could have their skateboard, and we could have a rock band to try to get the folks in, and then I give them that sort of warm Jesus loves everybody message, you know, and to change Santa Cruz, this very evil area. And nothing changed. It's just as evil as it ever was, I'm afraid.
Right.
And so we are going to have a unique opportunity, and I think very, very soon, and I think we should make our preparations, and I'm so glad you're doing what you're doing. We're going to have to take a 33-minute break, I should say. And when we get back, of course, we're going to welcome your calls here at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 464-8295 or 1-888-245-4237 for Maurice Smith, talking about the home church movement, which we hope one day will soon sweep America. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs and believe in our message and believe that these may soon be the times that try men's souls, that many of you will want to join the Radio Liberty family and partner with us in our effort to try to awaken the American people as to the spiritual nature of the battle in which we're engaged. And as Marisa said, the only hope for America is Jesus. The only hope is revival. The only hope is that the people will, of course, turn back to God as they have twice before in the history of our great nation. And so if you believe, as I do, that there's a real problem, and if you'd like to be part of our effort, and maybe you can't get behind a microphone, but you can certainly help us do what we do 5 hours every day and on some 50 stations across America every week. I wish we were on every day for 2 hours as we are here on this station, but some of the stations are only on for half an hour, but at least in half an hour people are going to hear the truth. And if you believe in what we're doing, you'd like to become part of our effort, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like a free copy of our latest newsletter, the September newsletter, and you haven't had one before, well, we'll be glad to send you one. Of course, we hope that many of you will want to partner with us and get the newsletter regularly, or perhaps even join the Radio Liberty family and receive 4 best tapes of the month and the monthly newsletter. But that is how we are able to do what we do. And, of course, to pay all the bills that are coming in on a monthly basis, but allowing it at least to have a voice. And when you join the Radio Liberty family, you become part of our voice. Now, you can, of course, go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. And you'll find many of our radio programs archived there. You'll find links to our other two networks, Genesis Network and the American Freedom Network. That's GCNlive.com for Genesis and AmericanNewsNet.com for the American Freedom Network. And, of course, please tell others about our radio programs. Tell others about our website and encourage them to go there. And try to get them to start listening or give them a newsletter. I think our latest newsletter, if that won't touch their hearts, if that won't make them realize it's a problem, why nothing will. And don't get discouraged. Your job is to tell them the truth. And if they want to listen, they will. And if they don't want to listen, then their blood and the blood of their family will be on their hands, because I believe we're moving into a very, very violent and terrifying time. And those who do not know the Lord, their hearts will certainly faint with fright. Because if I didn't, knowing what I know, if I didn't have faith in the Lord, I certainly couldn't do what I do 5 hours every day. Well, we hope to hear from you. Again, our telephone number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And if you'd like a free newsletter, why give us a call? Otherwise, we'll be back here in just a moment with Marie Smith. And, of course, we welcome your calls at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening is Marie Smith, and he comes with the highest of recommendations from our good friend John Loeffler. And Maurice, what sort of response are you getting? How large is the home church movement in America? What response are you getting when you're talking to people about it?
You know, once I have the opportunity to talk to people about it, the response is very encouraging. Seldom a week goes by that I don't just have a casual conversation with someone, and I was up at the hospital visiting a member of our network who was going through a surgery, and we were talking in the hospital room, and another friend of theirs was there, and this person asked my wife, she said, "Well, what is it you do?" And she said, "Well, we coordinate a network of house churches." Well, that launched into about a 5-minute conversation between them. She says, "Oh, I've got to get your phone number. We've been looking for this. We want to talk to somebody about this." I have those conversations on a regular basis. And those are just the personal conversations. That doesn't include, programs like this where we were able to talk to a larger audience. The bottom line is the House Church Network in America is small but growing very rapidly. And the average House Church Network in the United States is somewhere around 8 to 12 house churches. But most of those didn't exist even 2 years ago. And so it's small, but it's growing very rapidly. The most exciting house church network in the world, of course, is in China. I think what's happening in America is we have been so comfortable for so long. Our faith comes at a very small price. You can do pretty much whatever you want to in America as a Christian without having to pay a price for it. Now, that's beginning to change very quickly. But the result is we've been so comfortable, we've never had to think through a structure like House Church that is basically one born of the necessity of persecution. The early church discovered this. You know, by Acts chapter 9, the early church is being persecuted, and they're meeting house to house, and they did that for the next 250 years. The same is true in China and other countries of the world where the gospel is forbidden. For example, in Islamic countries, where it's you pay a very high price for your faith, what we're discovering is house churches spring up there in those situations because it's such a good persecution-resistant structure. Here in America, most of the impetus behind the house church movement is people who are frustrated with traditional church, who are looking for a more authentic expression of genuine church, and those numbers are small right now because there's not been very much networking. I'm finding more and more people who have been doing house church for maybe several years, but they don't know if anyone else is doing it, so there's not much networking going on. We're trying to change that. We're trying to get believers to who are doing house church to begin networking together, communicating with each other, because when difficult times come, we're going to need to know who's out there that can be trusted, who are meeting in their homes or in, you know, we had a house group meeting here in the local area last Friday night. We met in someone's garage. They have a very nice large garage, and so we didn't have house church. We had garage church last Friday, and we have meetings like that around our area, and those kinds of meetings are springing up all across the country, and we're here trying to put the word out to get Christians to coordinate with each other. And let me just tell your listeners, if you have been thinking about forming a house church, or you're already doing it and you want to know who else is out there, contact us through our website, www.parousianetwork, P-A-R-O-U-S-I-A network, Parousia Network, P-A-R-O-U-S-I-A network.com. And send us an email, let us know you're out there, and we have a weekly e-letter update that I send out to everyone on our list. You can subscribe to it for free there on the homepage. Let us know what you're doing and where you are, and we'd like to begin networking with you. We even have an affiliation process for people who would like to affiliate with us so that we have a relationship that we develop and work on over time. And our goal, my goal is not to tell you how to do church in your living room, is to encourage you to follow the leading of the Holy Spirit and to begin becoming the church that meets in your home. And that's what we're doing all over the country.
All right, fine. Right now we've got Mike calling in from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Hi, Stan. I wanted to ask a question that I think is related. It has to do with unincorporated churches.
Mm-hmm.
And these might be churches that actually organize more as under the appearances of a regular church. Possibly, you know, they outgrew their living room and had to find a building. But they choose to remain unincorporated. I wonder if these types of organizations are increasing in numbers.
That's a good question regarding unregistered or unincorporated churches. Let me give you a comparison. In China, it's estimated that there may be as many as 100 million believers in China. 30 years ago, when the missionaries were kicked out of China, that number was they were kicked out in about 1960, so 40 years ago when the missionaries were kicked out of China, there were about 10 million believers, and everybody was wondering if the church in China would survive. Well, when the doors reopened and we began getting back into China and finding out what was going on after the Cultural Revolution, we discovered that an amazing thing had taken place. The church had grown from 10 million believers to today it's estimated close to 100 million believers. Now, of those 100 million, we'll just take that as the round figure that's easy to work with, 85% of those 100 million believers attend underground, unregistered home churches. So 85% of the churches and believers in China are unregistered. Only 15% have been registered through what's called the Three Self-Patriotic Movement churches. Those are the official government-approved churches. So in China, 85% unregistered, 15% registered. Come to America and the figures are just the exact opposite. It's estimated that 85% of churches in America are registered. How you say, well, how do you register a church? You file a 501c3 with the IRS. That's how you register a church. You incorporate and file with the IRS, declare yourself to be a church. 85% of churches in America and believers in those churches are registered with the IRS. Only 15% are underground or unregistered. So that kind of gives you an idea of the difference that persecution can make. When you're persecuted and you don't want the government to know, 85% go underground. When you don't care, like we have here in America, where we've been supposedly user-friendly with regards to government, everybody wants to register with the government. And so as a result, you have 85% registered churches. I don't really want to spend too much time tonight talking about the philosophical differences between churches that register with the IRS and those that don't. There are a lot of independent churches here in America that are unregistered. What happens with home churches is, for example, our network right now is not incorporated or registered with the IRS. What are we going to do in the future? I don't know. We'll take it one day at a time and see what God leads us to do. But at this point, we are a church as defined as a network of house churches, and we would be considered unregistered, and you know, nobody knows that we exist other than the fact that we just go out and we just do it.
All right, fine. Well, I hope that you will maintain that position. Anything else you wanted to know?
That's all, thanks.
Okay, thanks. Let's go to Nathan calling in here from Contra Costa. Hi, Nathan. How are you doing?
Hi. Well, I have two just sort of interested questions, not really comments. Well, my first one is a detour question, and the second one is I'll take off the air as the main question. My first one, you said that things were going to hell in a handbasket, quote-unquote, after the revolution. Were you talking about Shays' Rebellion or the taxes? What were you referring to exactly? Out of curiosity.
All right, and so the question is, you know, after the American Revolution, you said that America started to move spiral downwards into depravity. What were you talking about?
What I was talking about is the moral condition of the colonies following the Revolution. The Revolution basically kind of wore the colonies out. The First Great Awakening prepared the colonies for the Revolution, you know, steal my soldiers' hearts kind of thing. But after the Revolution, most people don't realize that the new colonies, the new United States, went into a downhill slide morally. It reached a point where women, for the first time in the history of the colonies, women were afraid to go out after dark. Crime, violence, drunkenness skyrocketed. Thomas Paine, who was really a French radical, he imbibed French radicalism. French radicalism almost took over America after the Revolution, thanks to the work of Thomas Paine and others. And the situation got so bad that it was known throughout. I've got a whole article on this, and I'm trying to do some of this off the top of my head. West of the Allegheny Mountains became known, particularly in Kentucky, as Rogue's Harbor, because any felon who could get west of the Alleghenies was basically scot-free and could live unfettered despite their crimes west of the Alleghenies. And I'm trying to remember one particular quote, someone said that the American colonies had whipped the British but appeared to be no match for the devil. That was how bad things appeared to be. And it was in that moral cesspool. In fact, at Yale University, remember Yale University had been founded 100 years earlier by a fellow by the name of Elihu Yale for the purpose of preparing young men for the congregational ministry. But by the time that the Revolution was over, Yale, you could only, out of the entire student body, there were only two professing Christians in the entire student body. And the trustees of Yale University were so depressed and concerned that they hired Timothy Dwight, the grandson of Jonathan Edwards, to come and pastor the church to be president of the college. And basically, Timothy Dwight realized the place was in such a bad shape, he fired any faculty member who espoused French radicalism. Because the students were running around the student body naming each other Monsieur Rousseau and, you know, taking on the names of French radicals and, you know, the kind of stuff that college students do. But the college was going heck in a handbasket. They were not preparing anyone for the ministry. And so Timothy Dwight spent 7 years preaching the gospel. He would get them together in Connecticut Hall on Sundays and preach Christ crucified. And then he'd answer questions. He'd say, ask any question you want. He would refute French radicalism among the student body in open discussion. And finally, after 7 years of preaching, revival broke out in Yale. And finally, by the time Timothy Dwight died just a few years later, half of the student body had been converted to Christ and went to the mission field. But that was when he first got there. Were there only two professing Christians in the entire student body? Well, that was rampant throughout the entire, throughout all of the colonies until revival broke out at Yale in about 1795, and then by about 1799 it began to break out in the Logan County, Kentucky, and you had the Second Great Awakening that lasted from about 1799 until just before the War of 1812, so about 1811. So you had a period of...
Do you think that the moral influence of Washington helped to sort of revive things, his standards as a gentleman and, you know, the sort of influence that he had?
It's interesting. If you read the correspondence of Washington, Washington was very concerned about the moral state of the colonies after the Revolution. He was concerned that they weren't going to make it as a nation because things had declined so dramatically after the Revolution. Washington was a godly man. And he was very concerned about the moral state of the colonies after the Revolution. And so you read some of his correspondence. He corresponded with James Madison, and I'm trying to remember the other fellow. I'm blanking out on his name. But you read Washington's correspondence, and he was very depressed following the Revolution, that the moral state of the country was such that we might not survive as a nation, was his opinion.
Okay, well, do you have another question?
Well,
we've got somebody else on the line.
I'm going to let the question go and just leave off with a comment. People should be educated as to the fact that we really were founded as a republic, and they keep using the term democracy, and I'm just beginning to really be educated in this myself, and I think
right.
It does have a lot to do with the moral influence of Washington and of certain key people who did recognize that we needed to have a system founded on morality.
Amen
to
that.
I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Nathan. And right now, let's go to Herman calling in from Carmel. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, Herman. How are you doing?
Very good. I heard a quote today by Larry Burkett given in a speech to Moody Week where he said that he doesn't feel revival will ever break out in America unless the people totally turn their hearts to God and become good stewards of their money. That's one way that that they will basically work out that they really are acting in faith.
Right.
Okay. And
the other thing I wanted to ask is, do you have a phone number for those that are not on computers?
If you want to get in touch with us here at the Perusia Network, you can give us a call at area code 509-276-6469. That's area code 509-276-6469. Give us a call, and we'd be more than happy to talk with you, particularly about some of our materials that might be of benefit to you.
But Herman, just as a matter of thought, I have not been on the Internet. I've had people pull things down for me on the Internet, but I haven't been there. But I will tell you, the price of computers has come down so dramatically. There's some wonderful opportunities to get a good computer now at a fraction of the cost. And, of course, the computer gives you access to so much information, some good, some bad. But when you know what you're looking for, why it's there. So you may even want to reconsider.
Okay, thank you. And finally, do you feel that we do have a chance for a revival before it's too late for America?
Okay, well, that's two different questions. One is, can there be a revival? Number two, what's that got to do with America? And that's the sticky wicket, to quote my British friends. Is there's no guarantee that revival will result in cultural transformation. That is, you can have revival either before or during very difficult times that does not result in cultural transformation. In other words, America might not be saved from a cultural perspective. And that's, you know, that's something that's hidden in the providence of God, unfortunately. We don't get to see that. Now, can there be a revival? I appreciate what Larry Burkett is saying. It's a chicken and the egg question. That is, which comes first, revival or repentance? And the answer is, if you look at the history of revival, it gets all confused and mixed up. In every revival, God always has people who are fasting and praying for revival. And God opened a ministry in my own life of fasting and prayer and intercession for revival back in 1995, and then led me to write a book on the Welsh revival of 1904. And as I discovered in revival, revivals don't begin with large-scale repentance. Revival usually begins with people who are fasting and praying and crying out before God, asking God to have mercy, and then it breaks out in a small place, and then it begins to spread, and the result is the presence of God begins to move. And what does Scripture say? It says that when the Spirit of truth comes, He'll convict the world of sin, righteousness, and judgment. So that you really can't have conviction of sin and these kinds of things without the Spirit of God beginning to move. And so you get into this chicken and the egg question, and the only way I can answer it is this. Fast and pray for revival and see what God does.
That's all we can do.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Bob. Brian, let's go to Kurt calling here in Santa Cruz. Hi, Kurt. How you doing?
Fine. Yeah, of course, you know that prayer that I use in witnessing, and I'm making the offer that I make over and over. I'm there on Water Street, and we have a phone number locally, 425-5658, and I'm more than willing to train people in witnessing. If you're a guest, I'm an old Camps Crusader myself.
Very good. I've still got the four laws memorized. So once you memorize it, you never forget it.
All right, fine. Anything else, Kurt?
No, I just wanted to let people know, you know, I've made that offer to hundreds and hundreds of people, and I've had a tiny handful take me up on learning how to witness.
Well, the telephone number again is 425-5698.
No, 5658.
5658, I'm sorry. I've known Kurt for a long time. He's one of our regular listeners and supporters, and I don't hesitate at all to recommend them to you. That's 425-5658.
And they can call at 24/7. It's a business line.
All right, fine.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
All right, fine. Well, I guess this evening is Maurice Smith. We're talking about the home church movement and, of course, the impact that this has. And, of course, it is having an impact in China. The Chinese communists hate the home church movement. But, of course, the whole system over there is so is terribly, terribly corrupt. And you have to understand there is no communism in China. What you have is a ruling elite that are trying to maintain their power, trying, of course, to bribe the people by increasing their living standards to some element of a free enterprise system. But still, everything is controlled and regulated by the government, exactly as is increasingly happening here in America. And, of course, the great tragedy is the suffering of the Chinese people is a direct result of the interference of the wicked people in our State Department in the internal policies of China. Had we not intervened in China at the end of the Second World War, why, they probably would have gone on to develop a representative government, become the predominant force in the world, and, of course, the leaders of this country then would not be in the position they are today to dominate the world. And so what you want to do is impoverish the rest of the countries by imposing a system that you know won't work, and that is communism. And but with that comes the tremendous suffering of the Chinese people. And yet, of course, what the evil people meant for bad has actually turned into one of the greatest revival movements of all time. Isn't that true?
That's right. In fact, the Chinese government is absolutely petrified of the house church movement because the Chinese government there in China understands the role of the church in the collapse of Eastern Europe and Russia. And they understand that this house church movement has the potential of bringing them down. And there are estimates. I found an article on a website. It's JewishWorld.com is where I found it. But it's entitled The Great Awakening in China. And it's an interview with a fellow by the name of David Aikman, who went to China to kind of, he's a journalist, to look at the house church movement. And basically they're saying that right now, potentially, in a few decades, let's say within a generation, China could actually become a Christian nation because the house church movement is growing so fast, and the people in the house church movement have a commitment to win their nation for Christ. And so the Chinese government is seeing that the house church movement has the potential of cultural transformation in China, and it's got them scared. And so I would say there is hope for America through the house church movement, that if we can become a house church movement populated by people who, spiritually speaking, have had their hair set on fire, to where we are witnessing for Christ and doing the things that the church ought to be doing, we have the potential in the house church movement of winning America for Christ, just as the Chinese right now have a vision. The Chinese house church movement has a vision of winning their nation for Christ. And I say, amen, more power to them.
Well, you know, as I look at the great churches here in America today, and, you know, they've just bursting at the seams, and they've got 10, 20, 30, 5, 10, 20,000 people going to them. But they're not having an impact on the community.
That's right.
Has changed. And that tells you that if you use the traditional approach that has been used in the past, we are doomed to destruction.
Amen.
If the society is corrupt, it means that the church is corrupt and their message is corrupt. And until we change the message of the church and return to the traditional message of the church, nothing's going to change. Why don't you just give us your parting thoughts? We're out of time. It's been a fascinating, fascinating hour, though.
Well, I hope we can do it again sometime, but what I would encourage people to think about is that I believe that God is doing a new work in our day, and he's calling millions of Christians, just like those listening to your program right now, to become the church that meets in their house. And we'd like to help. If you want to call us, you can call us at 509-276-6469, 509-276-6469, or I would encourage you to go to our website, www.Parousia Network, P-A-R-O-U-S-I-A, parousianetwork.com, and look at ordering our House Church Equipping Handbook to help you become the church that meets in your home. You can order it through the website. Just follow the links, and it'll get you there. And we'd love to hear from you and help you become the church that meets in your home.
God bless you. Thank you so much, Maurice, and thank you for your leadership, because this is what we need, is somebody out there on the front lines, of course, encouraging and helping and pointing people in the right direction.
Well, blessings on all you're doing, Dr. Stan.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, fine, and I hope you enjoyed our program this evening with Maurice Smith. I think it's been fascinating. I enjoyed it, and we're going to get him back on our other programs, because I think that this may very well be what is going to spark the revival we hope and pray for in the difficult times that lie ahead. Remember the meeting we're having there at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course on the 23rd of November? Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Come and try to bring as many people as you can so we can get people to begin to prepare not only physically but spiritually for the difficult times that lie ahead. And so until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.
Have to wait and see what happens. Well, I just hope you can get a job.